take your advice, son. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, by country, tis of thee. I eat for social
From
progress.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Secretary of State John Kerry.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Have you been having a nice weekend? I have. Lots of work, but that's okay. I like working. And I hear that yesterday at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market, the one at the Wells Fargo Center, here it was a really great market, either because of or despite the rain. Some vendors don't show up, of course, when it does rain. But boy, the ones who showed up yesterday were really happy. Lots of customers, lots of support. So right on, you know, rain or shine, our farmers markets are the place to go. Spent about 2.5 hours at the Sebastopol Farmers Market today. Just had a great, great time. And tonight's show is happening because I spent some nice time in downtown Sebastopol. I was just walking around, I think it was on Tuesday, and a bunch of dachshunds in the window of the wine exchange caught my eye. And they're not typically open on Tuesday, but the door was open and I walked right in. And I said, hey, you want to be on the show Sunday? And Tom West said, sure. And here he is. Welcome to Mouthful.
Yeah, hi, Michelle. How are you tonight?
Good. Tell us about the dachshunds in the window.
Oh, well, I'm always trying to cook up new ideas for the window display every month. And I think the last 2 months we had The Wizard of Oz, which was really great. And I kind of cooked that up before Christmas. But then we got caught up in Christmas, and so we did more of the traditional Christmas window mm-hmm. display with Santa and lots of gifts and treats. And then I thought, well, what's coming up? What are we, you know, what's coming up? What's timely?
Easter, yeah. Bunnies.
Easter, bunnies, the Apple Sugar. Blossom Parade. And
yes.
I thought, well, what's my favorite group in the Apple Blossom Parade? And it's hands down dachshunds on parade. So
That tends to be a lot of people's favorite part of the parade.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's just so much fun.
You know? It's so silly.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
dachshunds are on their own kind of silly. And, you know, some of the people in the parade put costumes on their dachshunds, some don't, and you know, everybody sings a song, and some of the dachshunds will howl along with their humans. So you ended up with a bunch of dachshund paraphernalia.
I contacted three people that are involved in the Dachshund Club of Northern California Dachshund Club, and I got pointed in the right direction. And
Nan Waters
and Patty Price and Barbara Box.
Yeah. There's one other person that, what is her name? I'll think of her name at some point. She lives on Regal down near Regal Park.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be the long-haired dachshund rescue point
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm.
And she quit because she kept keeping them. Every now and then I see her walking. She's got 5, and I think they're full-size long-haired dachshunds.
Yeah, it could become a real obsession for a lot of people.
Yeah. So, you have a great window, and I've just loaned you 3 things to add to it.
Yeah, it's a really pretty display. We've got basically a bunch of dachshund toys, stuffed dachshund, plush toys, and
mm-hmm.
And they're all parading in the window. And
yes. Well, I'm contributing brass and wood.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, you're the Wine Exchange. Tell us about the name.
Well, it's the Wine Emporium.
Wine Emporium. Why am I calling it the Wine Exchange?
I don't know. I don't know. But
of course it's the Wine Emporium.
They both start with the... Yeah, it's the Wine Emporium, yeah.
Of course it is.
Well, yeah. And
I think the Wine... You know what? The Wine Exchange is in Sonoma.
Right.
So I'm just, you know, on the east side of the street, just like you are. Sorry about that. Wine Emporium.
That's okay. You just jumped off your pony and landed in the studio, you know. And it's a Sunday, too, that, like, I just want every minute to linger on and on because it's so beautiful out today.
It is. It's really wonderful. Yeah. And all the apple blossoms are popping and lots of others. And not all the wisteria, but a lot of it is blooming. Mm-hmm. It's just a great time of year.
Yeah, yeah.
So how long have you been there?
Well, we're on our 9th year now and on Main Street. And it's a... Mm-hmm.
Main block of Main Street.
Right. Dead center of town. Mm-hmm. And I think I started that with the idea to, you know, to create a food and wine community and also a hub for local as well as international wines to be presented to people. Mm-hmm. And wanted to have a tasting room also because... I think it's a great way. We teach wine more as an aesthetic, more like art or music or literature. And so there's a lot of different camps in terms of winemaking styles. Mm-hmm. And that varies from region to region. And even in our own area, we have a lot of different, you know, winemakers mm-hmm. and winemaker styles. And it can get, you know, kind of catty about, you know, one camp thinking that their style is better than the other guys. And
sure.
And that's kind of normal, but we want to present it in more of a way as an aesthetic. It also keeps me out of the heat from saying that...
This is better. You just say, this is what this is.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good example of what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. That way we can kind of keep all the slings and arrows from landing on me.
Yeah. So tell us about your inventory, what the range or the concept.
I like to say we carry... great examples of wines from around the region, around the globe. Mm-hmm. And we arrange the wines in the store by price in 4 different sections so that people can come in and they can kind of have, if they have a dollar amount in their minds, mm-hmm. we can kind of say, okay, stay within their price range, and then mm-hmm. we can pick a wine that's applicable for their uses. Mm-hmm. And
what are the 4
price ranges? Yeah. Yeah, there's 10 to 25, 25 to 40, 40 to 55, and over 55. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think when people are first starting out, too, it's probably a good idea to start in the less expensive mm-hmm. categories until they really develop...
what you like.
Yeah, or that they develop the tastes for mm-hmm. them, for sure. those things, because the tastes that are inherent in the really good wines are also there in the less expensive wines, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Over 55 would have been wasted on me when I was a kid.
Yeah. And plus, you know, you can't drink. A lot of people, you know, their budgets don't allow them to drink, you know, $50
sure.
wine
like
every
mine.
Night. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's the drinking, the daily drinking wines.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's the special occasion wines.
Yeah.
And special occasion can be all different kinds of things.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be, you know, sort of the acknowledged special occasions.
Yeah.
It could be a birth.
Yeah.
You know, when my grandson was born, I remember what we opened, you know, what we drank.
What'd you drink? You remember?
It was Gary Farrell before he sold.
Uh-huh.
It was a 94 Allen Vineyard.
Oh, nice.
And it was one of the last ones. And then when Lucas came mm-hmm. home from the hospital, the Child Protective Services are not listening. I was out of the 94. I opened in 97, which was, you know, for Gary, that was mm-hmm. a great year.
Yeah, that was good. I remember drinking that myself.
And I still have the bottle, and because he's just home from the hospital, and we're having a nice little dinner. And I took a few drops on my finger, mm-hmm. and I put it on his tongue and whispered, Pinot Noir. And I did this for like 9 months, uh-huh. where I would just put my finger in my wine glass, and I'd put a couple drops, because I like that really soft, delicate side. And I just thought, oh, I want him to have perfect pitch. And this one day, I forget, we were out somewhere. We were at an event, and I was holding him. Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody, and they were holding a wine glass. And he reached his finger over, put it in their wine glass, and then sucked on his finger. It's like, oh.
Yeah, they catch on fast, don't they?
Yeah. So we'll see. You know, now he's almost 13 and, you know, doesn't have any interest. So once he's an adult, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if, you know, and he does have a really good palate. Yeah. Really, he really enjoys food, and you know, he detects subtleties of flavor. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's
we'll
good.
Too. So yeah. You brought some things.
Yeah, I brought. You told me that you like champagne.
I love champagne.
So I thought we'd start with that
bubbles.
First. And
to me, you know, the sun comes up. Yeah. Let's open a bottle of champagne to celebrate.
And I brought one I thought you would really like too, because this is a wine. It's called. It's from a small grower producer in Champagne called Jean Vassel.
And that's one I don't know.
And it's from Boozy, which is so apropos. And then it's a Grand Cru, and it's called the Eye of the Quail. They say Oya de Perdrix, which the Oya means eye and Perdrix means quail. Mm-hmm. So what it really means is it's pink like the eye of a quail. And it's a slight pink color.
Uh-huh.
And it's very minerally, very precise.
Oh, nice.
It's chiseled is what I tell
people. Oh, chiseled. That's a good, now that's a great term for wine. Great term. I haven't used that one
chiseling
before.
Chiseling into stone.
I had a pink wine, very pale pink last night at the Green Center.
Yeah. What, do you remember what it was? Oh.
Lovely scent. Oh, yeah. It was Gloria Ferrer.
Oh, yeah.
They had they had Gloria Ferrer, and then they had J. Cuvée 20.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout that we were seeing Jesse
Wonderful.
Norman.
Well, I'll pour you a nice big glass so you can enjoy.
Oh, hold it up more to the microphones.
Oh yeah, we got bubbles going on.
Oh, that sound's coming through so nicely. Look at that.
Oh, yes.
And in your store, which section is this? Which of the four sections is this in?
Well, this is in the 55 up.
Really? Wow. Yeah, well, and you brought it to Mouthful.
Well, of course.
What a guy.
Well. It's the least I could do for you.
Oh, that's really lovely. Really lovely. And it reminds me of something.
That's one of the great things about wine. And you know, our sense of taste and smell, 90% of what we taste, we actually smell.
Smell, yeah.
And it goes back to the oldest part of our brain. It's called the nose brain, mm-hmm. or the rhinencephalon. And attached to that part of the brain are also the amygdala, which handles your mm-hmm. memories and your emotions. Mm-hmm. So every time you, like, eat something, it clues you in. And that's when we like things. It reminds us of things that we've already had before and that we that agree with us.
Yeah. And the quickest way to access memory is said to be through the sense of smell.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's our oldest sense.
It a lot too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's our oldest sense, yeah. And so what do you think of this wine? Can you tell me about it? What is it? What do you think it tastes like?
Give me a second here, cuz on first sip it was like, "Oh." But it's definitely got, I think, a layer of yeastiness, of mm-hmm. baked bread. That, just like nice baked bread. But the part of the baked bread where you really taste the yeast.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely got that flinty, stony, wet cement quality.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something that I'm going to move towards cheese, which is weird. Almost mm-hmm. like out towards the outer edge of a good Parmigiano,
mm-hmm.
like a 3-year-old maybe Parmigiano.
Right.
Something like that. That's where I would go. What's the vintage on it?
These are non-vintage.
Oh, these are non-vintage.
Yeah,
okay.
These are non-vintage. And I don't think they put the disgorgement dates on this.
It's really nice, and it's I love sparkling wines,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I like them fully dry. I don't care for the ones that have some sweetness, perceptible sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
So I like both California. I like California. I like France. I like Spain. This is, you would never mistake this as a California sparkling wine.
No. Although there are some good California sparklers
that
are quite good.
They're fabulous. I drink mostly California sparklers, and I have my favorites. I mean, Iron Horse. Really love Iron Horse. I love Jay. I love Schramsberg. I like Gloria Ferrer. I like Domaine Carneros. I like Art Hattinger here. I mean, we make fabulous sparkling wines. I've had a couple from the Atlantic Seaboard that were very nice. So, no, I would not. But this one, you can just tell. Mm-hmm. Partly, it's the texture of it. I wouldn't identify this as a California.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and the fact that, like, all the Champagne region in France is, like, grown over these incredible limestone quarries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just chalky, chalky limestone.
Now, how do you decide what you're going to bring into your shop? Because how many square feet is it? How many square feet?
It's 1,000 square feet.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, and I have to use three basic. We have a mission statement, and it's that we provide people with great wine experiences. We save them time and money, and we make them look good in the process. So, but the buying criteria is really simple. It's a little conservative too. We only do business with wineries that would enhance our reputation as a company. We want every wine to exceed the customer's expectations for the price they paid for it. Mm. And then we pick wines that are true to type, which means that they're varietally correct, and they taste like wines from the region they come from, that they have something to say, and they say it loud and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that goes back to the idea of giving people good examples of wines from different regions.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it really difficult. I mean, it makes it much easier for me to buy that way, because then I have something to fall back on, because typically we might try, 50 or 60 wines a week.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's alcohol, so you're trying it and you're getting a good buzz on by the end of the day. And then I only do it.
That happens even when you spit.
To me, it does. Yeah,
yeah. Sure. Because it's absorbed.
Yeah, and people have a lot of blood vessels in their nasal cavities in their mouth, and so I spit. God, you have to.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's it's a job too. It's a tough job. But also, it's also a business where there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and oftentimes you can be overwhelmed by your emotions or whatever's going on in the room, or you're getting a lot of pressure. If you don't buy this, you're not going to get it next year.
That kind of
thing. Or
it was like the same sort of pressure on a judging panel. I have real reservations about wine competitions, partly because I've done a lot of them, and the chemistry of the panel is, I think, nearly as important as the chemistry of the wines.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
if you got one, if you have somebody who dominates, that person who dominates is going to shift the results.
Right. Right. And then I think also for me, if the wines make the cut, oftentimes I'll take a 250 milliliter sample bottle home, which I keep these glass sample bottles with those little Grolsch tops on them, little flip tops, and I fill it up, and I'll say, "Well, I'm going to take this home and road test it." Because typically, when you're doing a 1 ounce pour, the wines that win are the wines that are that they pop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They
grab your attention.
They're the kid in the class that acts out the most.
Yeah.
And so they might be like, "You're like, wow, this is really great," but then when you take it home and you like have like a two glasses of it, you're like, oh, this is kind of really boring,
Yeah.
Or they're trying too hard, Sometimes winemakers, they're in all this pressure to make something really outstanding. It's a little bit way over the top sometimes, or it's over extracted, and then it becomes it sort of gets real tannicky because they're pulling out all the skin contact, and they throw in stems, and they just really want it to roar. And
yeah, well, that's the way to get, unfortunately, I think, that's the way to get the attention of some of the big wine writers.
Yeah.
Some of the big critics.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you this little story. I hope I haven't told this too often on Mouthful. Was the last time that I judged for the Harvest Fair, because somebody else took over, and, some people drop off, and I'm not drawing attention to myself. It's hard. It's very, nobody gives you any sympathy if you complain about, oh my God, I've been wine judging for 3 days.
Right.
No sympathy, and it's really hard work.
I know, and you just want to be like flat on your back after a while.
Yeah.
So
anyway, one of the rules I have is I do not try to guess who has made the wine. Mm-hmm. You know, I just taste. I tried to do my best. And I'd done enough at this point that I was getting a little more confident in standing my own ground. Mm-hmm. And so there was this one Pinot that just stood out to me as absolutely everything a Pinot Noir should be. And so when other members of the panel were trying to dismiss it, it's like, no, taste this again. You know, this is beautiful. It's not over-extracted. It's gorgeous. And it ended up making it all the way into that final round where they're going to taste for the sweepstakes winners. And I recognized it mm-hmm. because it was, you know, it was paler. It was less extracted. It had that Pinot thing in the nose. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, that cool. It made it in. It's because we gave it a double gold and it won best of class. And as we're walking out, Rich Thomas, bless his heart, I love Rich Thomas, he's walking out and he says, well, what I want to know is who's responsible for number three? That was the wimpiest wine. And as it turns out, it was Gary Farrell. I think it might have been the last of Gary Farrell before he sold the winery. It was absolutely gorgeous. Just one of, I like that delicate quality when it just really sort of takes your breath away with its subtlety.
Yeah. And Gary, he makes restrained wines too. So.
Yeah, I like restraint. Mm-hmm. Why don't we take a little musical break here on Mouthful? We'll be right back.
In a little trouble at the county seat. Lord, they put me in the jailhouse for loafing on the street. When the judge read the verdict, I was a guilty man. He said $45 or 30 days in the can. And that'll be cash on the barrelhead, son. You can take your choice, you're 21. Plan. No time to waste here, 'cause I'm a busy man. With a six-gun hip. He let me call long distance. She said, number, please. But no sooner than I told her, she shouted out at me. She said, that'll be cash on the barrelhead, son. Not part, not half, but the entire sum. No money down, no credit plan. My feet a heavy load. I saw a greyhound coming, stuck out my thumb. But before I got seated, the driver caught my arm. He said, that'll be cash on the barrelhead, son. This old gray dog gets paid to run. When the engine stops, slow the wheels don't. Down the road.
Graham Parsons song, Cash on the Barrelhead, from the Graham Parsons Notebook. The Last Whip or Will, from what I can tell, this is a tribute album. And I, let's see, who was that by? Looks like it was by Carl Jackson, I think. Tiny print. Anyway, Graham Parsons, the 10th annual Graham Parsons tribute. Instead of happening close to his fall birthday, it is happening Saturday, April 19th with Laughing Gravy. It will be at the Sebastopol Community Center Annex. Great sized room. It's a benefit for KRCB. It's a dance party. It is, you know, it is so much fun, you know. And there need to be a bunch of guys who go, who are available for dancing, because I'm not going to be taking my own partner, and I want to dance. Anyway, it's really fun. It's only $10. Morris Street, 425 Morris Street. I can't wait. It's probably the next night I'm going to go out, because I'm so busy. Anyway, there you go, Graham Parsons. We'll hear a little bit more of him in a bit. So we're really enjoying this sparkling wine. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. And I want you to move on to the next wine and tell us about it. And then I'm gonna take you in a little different direction. But let's do this
good.
First.
Okay.
Not so much a little surprise, but something that I encountered today that just sort of spontaneously that I want to talk to you about.
Oh, good.
Because I think it's right in your territory.
Did it happen at the farmer's market?
It did.
I bet it did.
Well, I'll even introduce it now. A friend of mine, I drink Pu'er tea. Pu'er, P-U-E-R.
Uh-huh. Pu'er.
Pu'er tea.
Tea, uh-huh.
And I was introduced to it for the first time here on Mouthful in uh-huh. probably 2002. And somebody from Samovar in San Francisco and the woman Mickey who opened Infusions in Sebastopol, mm-hmm. They were on the show, and Samovar made this cup of tea, and it changed my life. From the second I tasted that tea, I quit drinking my British style tea immediately, and I started drinking Pu'er.
Wow.
I love it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you saw it for a while, it was hard to find. I only got it at Infusions, but then Mickey sold and moved back to Israel. And then I started getting it at Many Rivers Tea Company. And then a friend of mine, who I'd introduced to Pu'er, he bought a whole lot of it. And I went in to visit him in San Diego. And he went back to coffee. And he gave me all his Pu'er, he thought. Well, he just found another stash. And he mailed it all to me. Box arrived yesterday. And we now have a Pu'er tea vendor in Sebastopol. And the woman is Young Su. And her mm-hmm. husband, Larry, they have a company, Pure Pu'er, and they've been on the show here. So I took these four types of Pu'er that he had sent to me for them to see. And it's like, what do you think? What do I have here? And while I shopped, she made tea and tasted them, and then we started to talk about them. And that's when I thought of wine tasting. Because one of the teas, it turns out, she said, if this was intact, and it wasn't, there was he'd taken a little bit off, and it had also not been stored properly, according mm-hmm. to her. She said, if this was intact and stored properly, it would be worth, and this is a, you know, I'm holding up my hands, what, like a soccer ball? Mm-hmm. As big around as a soccer ball, maybe, but no more, and flat. She said, this would be worth between $10,000 and $20,000 if it still had that little piece that he had taken off and then that she had taken off.
Wow.
She says it's between 30 and 50 years old, and she could read the Chinese writing on it, and she said this is from a very, very reputable company. But when we tasted it, it made me think of drinking, say, a 1968 Cabernet.
Mm-hmm.
That you open it up, and it's beautiful, and 15 minutes later, it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 minutes later, it has some new qualities. But it's all sort of, you can tell it's going. And that's how this tea was.
Yeah.
And that got me to think, it got me to thinking about those kinds of teas at that level. She also said the leaves are from, the tree must be at least 1,000 years old.
Wow.
And it just made me think that it would be really fun to taste these older Pu'er teas with an expert in wine tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even like taste a number of Pu'er teas and then taste a number of really old wines
mm-hmm.
and see where there's this intersection, because I do think there's an intersection in that quality and then the way it starts to drop off.
Right, yeah.
So it was, anyway, if you have any interest, I'll bring you by some.
Great, yeah, that'd be wonderful. Yeah, I could see different tannins, you know, tea tannin versus wine tannin.
Well, one of the things with pour, and one of the reasons I like it, is because it's aged, all pour is aged, it starts out without much tannin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I'm really sensitive to tannin.
Yeah.
So it's different, but all the other flavors are there. It's not like, you know, I mean, some of the most tea you get is so tannic.
Right.
And this is so smooth, and it starts out as smooth as a great Pinot Noir.
Right.
And it just gets better from there.
Yeah.
And lest you have the misconception that I got a lot of extremely valuable teas from my friend, the other brick, and that one was a brick, and the other brick, she made a cup out of that, and she said, don't drink this. She says, do not drink this. It's for display only. It's horrible. It's not drinkable. So he got the best and the worst. And then there were two middle of the road, loosely pu'er that are just totally fine to drink.
Nice.
But
nice.
To hold this round brick and think, God, this could have been, you know, this,
that's right. It could have,
could have
paid for a couple of semesters of college.
Yeah. It could have bought a new car. And here I'm holding it in my hand. I thought that was cool. So anyway, that's my story. But sometime we should taste it.
Yeah, I know that farmer's market is always so much fun.
And they're there. I don't know if you ever, do you live in Sebastopol?
Yeah.
You should come. They'll be there next, for weather, we're only every other week, but I know they're going to be there next week. And
you know, I go down and take
teas.
A head count. You know,
you
I go down. Oh, of course. If I'm awake, because Sunday's my day off. So.
Right. Yeah.
And I've got a big garden, so lately I've been planting a lot out in the garden, and so that's been taking up a lot of my time.
Yeah, and I try to never miss the Sebastopol. It's my entire social life takes place at the Sebastopol market, because otherwise I'm working.
And I go down to see Paula and Darren and.
Yeah, which one's Darren?
Well, Darren's sort of Paula's eyes and ears.
Oh, yes, okay.
She's on the ground, you know.
Okay, yes. And, you know, Dennis.
Yeah.
And I see Dennis and Nan. I always go to get my green drink from Nan. And
there's a lot of great
George, George has the best salad mix now. Mm-hmm. He's got that little onion grass, he calls it, which goes into it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we're so grateful, I think, of, you know, all of us Sebastopol downtown merchants, we're very grateful to have the farmer's market there. And
now that it's year-round, I'm just so happy that it's year-round.
Yeah, it's a real plus for our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the things going on at the Barlow also are really good for the town, too.
There's some interesting things going on at the Barlow. I'm excited about Vignette.
What's that?
Okay, that I wrote
Is
about
that new thing, huh?
Yeah, that I wrote about in my Friday column.
Yeah.
Mark Hopper. He's a chef.
Uh-huh.
He's got interesting credentials. He worked at the French Laundry in Bouchon and then Farm Shop. And at the same time, he's extremely down to earth and personable and not pretentious. He's opening Vignette. It's the one freestanding building. It's there on McKinley. He's got, I met with him about 10 days ago. He'll have three small appetizers, three large appetizers, six or seven kinds of pizza, individual size, two desserts, which will rotate each day.
Mm.
That's it. I think he's open. I think it's 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week.
Wow. Well.
He's just really focused, doesn't want to do fancy food anymore.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do fancy food now. His pizzas are, it's all about the dough. And his concept about the dough and the way he's doing the dough, right on. It sounds really great.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the spoiler, everybody.
Uh-oh.
One of his pizzas has lardo on it.
Mm.
Do you know lardo? You know lardo, yes. Mm-hmm. Lardo, real lardo.
Yeah.
Which is, lardo is...
It's like fatback, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cured fat. Mm-hmm. Cured pork fat from a certain part of the belly.
Mm-hmm.
And in... Italy, it's sliced tissue thin. You know, if you were to hold it up, you could see through it. And then it's served maybe on a crouton. And I was at this restaurant in Sicily, in Ragusa, Ilba, with like, I don't know, 10 or 12 other Americans. And they presented us with our first course, and it was just a crouton. And I thought, I was like, oh my God, it's lardo. Mm-hmm. I am in heaven. No one would eat it.
Oh,
lard. I'm not eating lard. So I think I ended up with everybody's lardo. It was so good. And it is. It's got that, because it's cured with salt. So it's got that bright acidity.
Yeah.
And it's so thin. There's probably like 25 calories in it.
Yeah, we hope.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's really, it's so, it's such a tiny amount.
Yeah.
Such a tiny amount. I mean, if you think a tablespoon of olive oil has 100 calories, I think butter has right around the same. Mm-hmm. And it would probably take 10 or 15 of these slices to make a tablespoon.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's really not, there's not much to it, but it's so packed full of flavor. So he's got one pizza that has lardo on it. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. Sounds exciting.
Yeah. So I think I'm really happy about that, and that it's going to be open until 10 every night, which is great.
Yep.
And then we also got another month or so, and K&L Bistro will reopen.
Yeah, I walked by there yesterday, and they're still getting it together.
Yeah, well, they're
plastering.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. They're going to have a Parisian raw bar, and a Parisian raw bar, of course, has oysters on the half shell. But also, there will be tartars. You know, there'll be a couple kinds of steak tartare, I think. There'll be their popular, hugely popular tuna tartare, pickled shrimp.
The frutti di mare.
Probably. Yeah, I'm sure you can get a frutti di mare platter.
Yeah, that'll be really cool.
Yeah, but
those
every
are always
day,
my favorite.
Every day, they will have certain hours where oysters on the half shell are a dollar.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so you don't have to buy a ticket. Plane ticket to New Orleans. Downtown Sebastopol is going to have a dollar. Oysters on the half shell for a dollar. You will find me there. It will be my second office. Can't wait.
You'll find me there too.
Cool. Okay, so you've got something ready to open.
I got something else here, and this is a, since I know you love Pinot, this is a Bikasuge 2010 Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir. It's called The Habitat, and it's quite a lovely wine, but I'll let you decide that.
But I want you to say the name again.
Okay, it's B. Kasuge.
So it's initial B and then Kasuge. I don't know anything about them.
Byron Kasuge was a winemaker at Sainsbury.
Oh, Sainsbury.
For about 15 years.
Great winery.
Yeah, and he's a UC Davis grad, and so he's got the credentials. And I think he worked there for 15 years. And he worked under a guy named William Nuttall, who worked there. And then William also worked for a long time at Dry Creek Vineyards as well. So, and they tend to make really excellent, balanced, moderately priced wines that are, I think they're quite good. And they definitely meet our criteria for the consumer. And but I think the best way is just for you to try it.
Okay, well, I'm going to get this up here to the microphone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that cork didn't make much of a pop coming out. Okay, we'll start.
Just because it came out as it should. These loud corks that, you know, it's... Okay, let's see. Let's hold it up to the light. Yes, I have a couple dresses of this color. Before I even taste it, what a fabulous texture.
Yeah.
This is really interesting. Tell me again where the vineyard is.
This is actually a blend of two vineyards. One vineyard is called the Leapin Vineyard, and it's actually right here by the KRCB studios in Cotati.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of at the corner of Stony Point and 116.
Okay. Know exactly where
somewhere.
That is.
And it was grown biodynamically. So I think that it's no longer called the Leapin Vineyard because the property changed hands, but that was the name of the vineyard in 2010. And then the second vineyard is on High School Road,
just
a little bit north of Annaly High School, and it's called the Baranoff Vineyard. And those are planted to small, like meter-by-meter spacing, so they tend to plant a lot of plants per acre. And but they only get about a pound per vine. So I think they do, what is it, like 3,600 plants per acre. They get 3,600 pounds, which is like 1.8 ton per acre.
I don't remember
yield.
The standard planting in California was 500 per acre.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah.
So you really get a nice bunch of berries off of that one plant, and so you'll get a wine that's you know, well balanced in terms of, like, you're not stressing out the vines a lot.
I'll tell you this: the aromas of this are filling the studio, I think.
Yeah,
and there's
it's almost like a burgundy haze in the room.
It's. And there's so much rhubarb in it.
Yeah.
So much rhubarb, which is something that I don't see all that often lately, but that I really like. I really like that, that rhubarb quality in a Pinot. The texture is just absolutely lush.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good deal, too. I mean, it's $50, so it's not in the 55 and plus camp. There were only 75 cases of this wine made too, so it's not like there's three barrels of wine. So it's but it's quite good, quite elegant. And again, it's not over the top. Even though, you know, I like big ripe Pinots too, but I just have an appreciation for wines that have a texture like this that you're talking about.
This is an example of the type of Pinot that. It makes me want to fall
to
my knees.
Yeah, I bet it make your heart pitter-patter. When you were telling me the other day what kind of pinots you like, I was like,
exactly,
okay, well, I'll bring something Michelle's going to like.
It reminds me, and I'll think of it. You may know, there was a guy, he's in Oregon now, and for a time he was making Pinot in Richmond, in this weird industrial region of Richmond. And the way that I can even tell you what year, was 1997, and I had won a James Beard Award, which made the publication for whom I wrote the story angry, because they always get angry if a freelancer wins an award, and I was a freelancer, and so they were pissed off. So my best friends, my two best friends, Jim and John, took me to Chez Panisse to celebrate. And they had me order the wine. And I ordered by price because they were taking me. And there's this Pinot Noir, and I ordered the least expensive Pinot Noir. It was so, I think it was $27 on the restaurant menu.
Wow.
But $97. And we were upstairs at Chez Panisse, not downstairs. It was so good. And I started doing some research. And, you know, you weren't doing that much research online yet.
Right.
I know I didn't find him online. But I ended up going down. I got some friends together. And I ended up going down to this place in Richmond. And I fit, like, seven cases in the trunk of my car, in my old Toyota.
Wow.
And, you know, I think I bought one case. And this dear friend who helped found KRCB, he bought four cases. He passed away about a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
He bought four cases.
Wow.
And as soon as I taste this, I thought of that, and I can see him taking, I mean, I'm sure they still have some in their wine cellar. He would love this wine. He would absolutely love it. And I've got to think of the name. It was a long name. It was, I think, three syllables. I can see the label.
You got me stumped.
I will think of it. It's not Thackeray. No, it's not Thackeray.
Not Sean Thackeray, no.
No, it's not Sean. No. But anyway, you'll recognize the name. But he moved up somewhere in Oregon, south of Portland, but inland, not out in McMinnville or anything. I think it's a little bit north of Ashland. And he's making wine there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what this. See how much a sip of wine can evoke.
Yeah, see, it brings back all your memories.
But this is real, and so it sells for $50.
Yeah, $50.
God, it's really gorgeous.
Yeah, and wine—you know—wine's a lot like performance art too, and that's one thing that, you know, people really, I think, need to appreciate with wine too. Is like, you make it, you know. Sometimes you have a great performance, and many
you
wineries.
You gotta let it go.
Yeah, and they have a great performance, but then it's gone. It's not like, you know, do it again, you know.
Yeah.
And even if you have, like, a couple cases of the wine, it's not going to taste the same every time you pop it open.
No. I've learned that, and I've got one bottle of Copeland Creek Pinot Noir 2005 Pinot. I've got one bottle left, and I can wait too long.
Yeah,
I can save the last amount of the best olive oil I ever tasted, the best lemon marmalade, the best whatever. Yeah. I can wait till the right moment and lose it.
Yeah.
So really, the message is enjoy it.
Enjoy it absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Enjoy it completely.
Yeah. Do you have anything in the store other than wine? Tell us about what else you have. Other than
I got a lot of dachshund toys right now. A woman came in yesterday and she said, "Oh, I love all the dachshunds in the window. Are they for sale?" And I had to tell her. I said, "No, they're for the parade." And she was from out of town, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel like a big, you know, Sebastopol booster being in
absolutely.
In town. What do we sell? Yeah, we do. We sell, we sell a lot of glassware and corkscrews. We sell wine glasses and decanters and tons of corkscrews. And
why does one need a decanter?
Well, you know, because people like to aerate their wine. They like to put some air on it.
Okay.
And some decanters are more designed to help you shed sediment.
Okay.
And that's a good thing, so they're designed too.
So that the sediment stays in the bottom of the decanter.
Yeah. Yeah, and then most of them nowadays are like these sort of they're narrow at the top and then they go really wide at the bottom.
I have one like that.
Yeah,
and I picked one up for like $7 at a thrift store.
Yeah. That's probably the best way to get them cuz ours are like $80 or $50, you know, but usually they end up in your curio cabinet and you use them once in a while, you know, but most of the people, I don't actually use decanters myself.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to let the wine open up in the glass.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a big advocate of using good glassware because glassware is like since we're in a radio station, it's like a great stereo needle back in the days when
That's
you remember.
That's such a great analogy.
Yeah. Or it's like a megaphone. It amplifies everything that's in the wine.
You know, and we had early on in Mouthful, probably in Mouthful's second or third year, we had a rep for Riedel come in.
Mm-hmm.
And my engineer at the time, dear sweet Ted Crimmy, I love Ted. He's moved back to the East Coast. At the end of the show, he even said, "I know nothing about wine at all, and I could tell the difference."
Exactly.
It's remarkable. Yeah. So what glassware do you think, do you sell?
Well, I don't think the brand is...
Is it the shape that matters?
It's the shape more than the brand. You know, there are two... We sell a brand called Schott-Schwiesel, which is a German glass manufacturer. And my background is in chemistry, so I used Schott-Schwiesel blown glassware in the lab. When I was doing chemistry.
Uh-huh.
So it was a no-brainer for me to buy Schott-Schwiesel.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about the Schott-Schwiesel glassware is that they use titanium instead of lead, so it's lead-free crystal.
Oh.
And the titanium makes the glass really durable. I mean, we're still using the same glassware on the bar that we started with.
So does crystal made with titanium, you're saying it lasts longer? It's longer?
Yeah, it's harder.
Harder to break?
Yeah, it's harder to break. Usually, if it breaks, it's going to break like the first day you use it, and because it might get a stress fracture, or, you know, or something happened to it in transit or something. But after that, you know, I mean, barring, you know, dropping it onto a concrete floor from, you know, 3 feet.
My grandson explored gravity by dropping all of my Riedel champagne glasses out of the cabinet before I could reach him. So I'm actually in the market for champagne flutes.
Oh, good, yeah. Is he like two or how old is he?
No,
how old was he when he did that?
About 19 months.
19 months?
Yeah.
He's now almost
13. But he was about, I saw him, we were having a party, and he'd opened up the cupboard and he'd picked up a Riedel champagne flute and opened his hand and he just had this look of wonder.
It is amazing, breaking things.
So I didn't get upset with him. I mean, I didn't let him know. He didn't. I mean, I just grabbed him so he wouldn't cut himself.
Yeah.
But I had eight, and I think he went through three before I could get to him.
Yeah.
And then visitors have taken out three more, so
well,
I need some champagne flutes.
Well, good. We have them for you.
Cool, right?
We've
great.
Got about five different styles of those.
Why does one want... What does one want in a champagne glass?
Champagne glass? Mm-hmm. Well, there's a bunch of different styles, actually. I mean, the common one that we use here in California is the flute, you know.
Yeah, so that's what we're drinking now.
Yeah, we're using a flute. And, you know, a flute, it has a stem, of course, and then it's a tall, thin glass. But there are many champagne glasses that sort of just open up like a tulip, and they're a little bit wider. They're maybe like, oh, I don't know, 3 inches in diameter at mm-hmm. the top. They might Definitely. Even flare out a little bit. And I like those a lot, too, because you get much more of the nose of the wine in, but mm-hmm. it sacrifices bubbles. Usually, if you have a tall
I'm all about saving bubbles.
Yeah. I think it's really cool to have the... I like the other ones, but I broke all of mine, and Schatzweasel doesn't make any. They make some hand-blown ones like that I like, but...
What about the ones everybody used in the 50s and 60s? Were they really patterned after Marie Antoinette's breasts?
Yes.
They were? Oh, okay.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
A definitive answer. I like that.
Yeah.
And they're not
It's a nice shape.
It's a nice shape, but is it really? Because to me, it just seems like the wine cools off too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of like a martini glass, you know. And that's another great champagne glass I had, too. It had a hollow stem all the way down to the bottom. And then it came up, and then it fluted out like that, like a martini glass. Mm-hmm. And it was so cool because it was a bunch of different colors. It was like sort of this a burgundy red at the bottom, and then it sort of tapered out as as the glass got thinner at the top. That was, and I don't know when we used to always go antiquing, you know, mm-hmm. as kids, and we'd find these incredible things, and just you know, sort of have this obsession about these antique things. For me, having old things around is such a great thing. Way to stay in touch with the past. Mm-hmm. You know,
we had a guest here on Mouthful that was inspired by the Wine Exchange, which probably is why I was calling you the Wine Exchange.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Wine Exchange had a collection of absinthe posters.
Right. Yeah.
And sold them to this mm-hmm. company, and the guy who bought them came, and he bought the brought the brands of absinthe that he sells, but he also brought this hand blown absinthe glass,
right,
with a hollow stem, mm-hmm. and in the hollow stem, down where you know it would be the part of the champagne glass where you held it, mm-hmm. there was a bulb, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess you'd call it a bulb, just a blowout area,
right.
I swear, he poured absinthe in, and then he poured in the water, and you could see the green fairy in that little bulb.
Oh.
You could see the green fairy open up and uh-huh. extend her wings, or her limbs. It was amazing. I uh-huh. still have that glass.
So is that how they... It's not just that you're hallucinating, you're seeing the green fairy.
It was before
this,
I had any.
Yeah, it's this thing that happens, too, when you add the water to the absinthe.
When you add the water because of the interaction of mm-hmm. the essential oils and the water. And I don't know if the person who engineered the glass had that in mind, but in that moment, mm-hmm. on Mouthful, we both saw the green fairy unfold. Yeah. It was wonderful.
Yeah, you know, you can grow absinthe here.
Oh, I've grown tons of it.
Tons of it, yeah. I mean, what's the plant called? It's
absinthe.
Artemisia. Artemisia, yeah.
Yeah, and it's Artemisia absinthea.
Right.
I failed.
It's like a gray white.
It gets really funky when there's
a
lot of rain.
Yeah.
Well, it smells like absinthe. It smells like anise.
Yeah.
I grew a lot of it down my hillsides and stuff, mm-hmm. but it was when we had a lot of heavy rains, and it looks really bad, and it eventually died off. But now you can go buy it at Harmony Farm.
Yeah,
almost anywhere.
I had it in my yard for a while, but it just grows like a weed.
It does.
And you just, after a
it's
while,
it's a good drought
like,
year plant. Good plant for drought. It looks really fabulous during droughts.
Yeah.
But now we can buy absinthe.
Right.
And you can't sell it, right? Because is the alcohol too high?
No, I don't sell spirits. So, you know, usually I stop at port.
Stop at port, okay.
Yeah, stopping at port you know, I love that part of, you know, it's funny. I got into the wine business in like 1992, and I was, you know, as a chemist before that.
Where?
And then
in 92, where were you?
I started doing telephone sales of wine.
Windsor Vineyards.
Well, some offshoot of that, and I did that for 14 years because. I don't, you know, once I get into a job, I just sort of dig my heels in and then just start mm-hmm. doing it. And plus we were really going off in uncharted territory too. So, mm-hmm. I think when I started, you know, my boss and the people that were selling wine, they were selling you know, Cab, Chard, and Merlot, and it was all, you know, somewhere between, you know, $10 and $100, and mostly all California stuff. And then I started finding all these customers that wanted, you know, they wanted white Burgundy, and they wanted Bordeaux, and they, you know, they wanted Burgundy and all these really exotic wines.
So that was sort of, was that sort of the inspiration for the Wine Emporium?
Yeah, I mean, I just, I had to get into a business where I could have some equity for myself. And so, you know, I talked to my boss and I said, you know, you either need to make me a partner or I got to go, you know, find some place where I can get some equity myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now we have the Wine Emporium in downtown Sebastopol.
Yeah.
What are your hours?
Well, I work Monday through Saturday, so I'm usually there those days. The retail hours are Wednesday through Saturday, 12 to 6.
Wednesday through Saturday, 12 to 6?
Yeah, that's when I actually open the doors.
Okay, but there's a buzzer.
Yeah, it says close, knock for service, so, you know, on the other days of the week, like Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
But, you know, usually Tuesday afternoons I meet with vendors, so
yeah,
I don't, you know, you can't...
That's what you were doing when I was there.
Yeah, you can't really split your time between customers and vendors. It just gets too crazy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Website?
The-wine-emporium.com, or you can just Google Wine Emporium Sebastopol.
Okay, yeah, and that'll do. Yeah. So, and do you sell much wine through your website?
A little bit. I think I'd say we sell most of it through telephone and emails.
Oh, okay.
And then the website, you can shop 24/7 on it. It's just most people want to talk.
Sure.
You know, they want to talk and make sure that they're picking up the right product. So oftentimes they'll be cruising the website, and you know, and that way they can kind of see the background information because there are reviews and tasting notes and pricing and all that stuff and pictures of the labels. So.
And on that note, we didn't even get to the two other wines you brought, but it's been a great hour. It's Tom West of the Wine Emporium. Thank you so much. Oh. You'll come back sometime, right?
Yes, I'd love to. Thanks. We can finish up where we left off, Michelle.
Okay. And be sure to wave during the Dachshunds on Parade.
That's
because
right,
Joey and Lark will
That's
be there.
Right.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle, Anna, Jordan. Have a great week. Treat yourself well and treat others really well, too. And meet me back here one way or another. Really soon.